Welcome to Inside Jobs, a cybercrime magazine podcast series brought to you by Code 42. Code 42 is defining data security standards for the hybrid workforce. As the needs of workforces have evolved, so has Code 42's data security and insider risk management solutions. To learn more about our sponsor, visit code42.com. I'm your host, Hillary McClure, Vice President of Multimedia Productions at Cybercrime Magazine. Here with me today is Austin Wolf, Staff Information Security Analyst at Code 42. Welcome, Austin. It's great to be speaking with you today.
Thanks for having me.
Austin, this is a part of our mini-series, and this is part two of the three-part mini-series that's centering around the approach to empathetic investigations. Last episode, I discussed with Krissa how the empathetic mindset helps insider risk analysts, and today we're going to go further and discuss how to conduct an insider risk investigation when leading with empathy. So to start off, Austin, do you want to give us some examples of events that would initiate an insider risk investigation?
In short, it typically gets kicked off by anything we don't understand. So we get some very good visibility from our tooling in terms of seeing where data is moving from place to place within the organization and then sort of as it leaves the organization. When we come across events or file movement that we don't understand or that the tool can't either tell us what happened or we're not able to understand maybe the intention behind why an action was taken, that's really what gets us kicked off into the process. So those investigations do tend to take the form of questions to an end user regarding, you know, what it was that happened.
As I'd mentioned, we're discussing how to conduct these insider risk investigations when leading with empathy. And I'm thinking to better understand that need, perhaps we need to have a brief overview of how insider risk investigations have been handled historically. So can you take us through kind of what the status quo has been like?
Insider risk being a relatively new domain as it comes to security has often been conducted by security professionals who have experience conducting investigations where you're potentially dealing with an external threat. And what we've seen as a result of that is the attempt to sort of wholesale take the techniques and procedures that are used when dealing with external threats and apply them to when you're dealing with internal threats or internal risks. And that's potentially where some breakdown and some friction ends up taking place, because obviously when you're dealing with an external threat, it's the very definition of a threat. It's somebody from without your organization trying to gain access, trying to do you harm, trying to do something nefarious or malicious. When we deal with insider risks, when we deal with our coworkers, we need to take a little bit of a different approach, primarily because, you know, to start out with, just at the very base level, the people that you're dealing with have been chosen out of a pool of potentially qualified candidates to be imbued with access to different systems and data, and they're trying to do their jobs. So we need to approach these investigations a little bit differently, just because you're not dealing with somebody who is starting from a place where they're trying to do you harm. You're starting from a place where this is a person that you have given access to these systems and asked to perform some specific tasks. So oftentimes, if we approach it the same way that you do when you're dealing with somebody who is deliberately out to harm an organization, you're gonna get into trouble.
So how is leading with empathy differentiated, I guess, is what I'm thinking. You know, what makes this approach perhaps unique and perhaps more successful?
The way we talk about it internally and the way I was brought up on it was to presume positive intent. And I want to make sure I'm clear on that. So we're not assuming positive intent, because you know what they say about assuming things. But when we presume, we begin an investigation or we begin a string of inquiry from a position that the person who you're dealing with is not out to harm you, not out to maliciously take action which is going to result in harm or risk to your organization. That may be the case. That may be the result of an action. You know, risk may be incurred, or somebody potentially has those malicious intent. We've seen plenty of cases of that. But to begin the investigation from that place would be problematic, because then you're sort of assuming guilt until proven innocent. And so we try to flip that around and make sure that we are presuming that the activity and the action of the end user is something that is that was taken in good faith, basically.
And can you tell us about the steps to a successful insider risk investigation?
Sure, absolutely. In general, there's a couple of pieces to it. So you obviously have your technical pieces where you're gathering information, reviewing data, potentially logs, potentially files themselves. You're taking a look at various data sources. That's the one piece. That's sort of the technical piece. You're doing documentation as well. So you're writing down what it is that you've done and what you've found and maybe the questions you ask. But then another large component, and potentially the larger side of the investigation, is actually the people side. So this is when you're talking to potentially security leadership or your business partners in legal or HR, because those can really help shape and direct your investigation and your energies. And then also, once you have sort of your direction and you've collected the data that you can from your tools and you've gotten your input from your security leadership and, you know, HR and legal has weighed in and you're sort of coming to a decision point, there also may be some interviews to be conducted with the subject themselves or even a subject's manager. Examples of that would be where you reach out to an individual and say, hey, here's what we're seeing. Here's what we observed based on our tooling. Here's what we saw happen from your endpoint. This file was sent or shared or whatever. And then you ask whatever relevant follow-up questions you have. You know, did they mean to do this? Was it their intention to share it in this way? Or, you know, were they aware that they were making that document public? Things like that. Examples of things that you may talk to a manager about, which in my experience would typically take place prior to an interview with a person with a subject of an investigation. The managers tend to be good sources for things like, you know, is this typical? It was this sort of string of actions typical? Is this part of the subject's sort of routine job, you know, day-to-day responsibilities? Did the manager like specifically ask them to take this action? Because that also is a helpful thing to know is, you know, we see something out of the ordinary or potentially suspicious looking, and you speak to a manager and the manager said, oh yeah, we're working on this new project. I asked the subject to do that. And they're like, oh, okay. So that's helpful clarification too, which can sometimes save you from having to have those conversations with a subject, which, you know, when security knocks on the door and wants to sit down and have a serious chat about things, that does leave an impression for folks. And so we try not to do it unless necessary. And then when it is necessary, to approach it with, you know, with as much empathy as possible.
So how can security teams and organizational leaders alike use the information they've learned during insider risk investigations to improve in the future?
Like a lot of security incidents, you can learn a lot from the things that go wrong. So when you find that somebody has done something with data in your organization that you don't approve of or don't necessarily like that was the outcome, that's a great time to review policies and procedures potentially, to maybe do an access review to say sort of who has access to the systems and data. Are we ensuring that that's provisioned appropriately and then revoked appropriately sort of as needed? So those are sort of the primary places. To give just a brief example of something where this may occur, we had a situation a couple of months ago where a Windows user was departing our organization. So they left, and their endpoint, obviously we're all still in sort of a semi-remote workforce type situation. So they had their endpoint with them at their residence. Shipping had been sent to them so that they may return it to us. And sort of between the period that their access was revoked or, you know, everything was stood down from a company perspective, and when they sent it back, we actually saw that endpoint light up again. So our insider risk tools, you know, started to send data again. We have an agent which lives on the endpoint, and it observed that the user was emailing a bunch of files from that endpoint out to what appeared to be a personal destination. In the end, this did not end up representing malicious risk. This person wasn't, you know, trying to steal company secrets or something that they had left on the hard drive. It was like dogs and pictures of dogs and cats and tax documents. But it is a good example of something where the stand down procedures needed to be revisited after this incident, because we learned that potentially we are leaving this gap of time where someone has been deprovisioned, where their access has been revoked, but that the endpoint has not been returned. And then, you know, there's some quirks also with the Windows side of how things are deprovisioned, where somebody could be sort of left with local access to the machine, which is really what happened in this case.
And so my final question for you, Austin, in this episode is, you know, what would you tell security leaders who are starting down the path of leading with empathy during those insider risk investigations and beyond?
Two thoughts on that. Firstly, I think setting some ground rules to begin with to ensure that the analysts and the users that are conducting these investigations have their head in the right place, I guess, is the way I'd put it. So ensuring that they know that and remember sort of every day, it's that sign that lives above the door that says, you know, these are your people. This is your flock that you are protecting. And oftentimes it's you protecting them from themselves or somebody making a mistake. You know, a new hire is coming on. They're still getting used to the tools. And all of a sudden they start sending a bunch of data, you know, publicly or you know, misconfiguring things. And so that's part of our responsibility is to make sure that folks don't do harm accidentally. And at the same time, that sort of vigilance transfers over into the like to ensuring that, you know, nothing malicious is going on either. So ensuring that your analysts have their mindset correct as they go into each day, each scenario, that's the big one. But then also communication is actually my second most important one on this. Ensuring that you have good, strong partnerships and working relationships with your human resources team and your legal team. Without those things, security teams can get into bad situations where potentially they're taking actions. They're hot on the trail. They're following the leads where they may lead them. But making sure that you've always got that oversight and that consent of your people team, your HR team, and your legal team is also a great way to avoid any conflict.
Excellent. Well, Austin, it was a pleasure speaking with you again. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us and lend us your expertise.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks.
I'm Hillary McClure, Vice President of Multimedia Productions at Cybercrime Magazine. Inside Jobs is brought to you by Code 42, who is committed to helping transform data security and bring greater awareness and solutions to the insider risk management movement. To learn more about our sponsor, Code 42, visit code42.com. And you can listen to all of our podcasts at cybercrime.radio.